brain hemorrhage and stroke on the 20th of July 2019. A year ago, back on Saturday the 20th of July 2019, I had a brain hemorrhage and stroke. It is only now that I feel ready to talk about this. I jest, it is talking about myself and something that I love to do and do all the time. The delay though has meant that this has turned into an anniversary post. So, happy brain hemorrhage anniversary number 2 to me. Yes, 2, as I did have a big one when I was 15 years old. I will explain why there was a delay in writing this post in a bit, but firstly, here's the story. It was a nice sunny day and I was feeling superb. The night previously, I'd finally decided on which return flight I wanted and booked it for my first ever visit to the United States of America. I did go to bed really late that night, but equally woke up really late. I was well rested. I was excited as the holiday was now beginning to slot into place. As per usual, I went to the gym for a quick run, returned home and had a shower. I was really looking forward to an upcoming event that evening. It was due to be my 10-year secondary school reunion, an event which I had meticulously organised. The night before, as well as booking the flight, I had been finalising hundreds and hundreds of photos from well over a decade ago to show on a big screen at the reunion. Just before I left for the reunion, I went up into the attic to get some old school year planners that I'd kept. When looking for them, I quickly swung my head around and bashed it into one of the beams. I remember thinking it was such a wallop. Apparently, this had no effect whatsoever on what was about to happen. I got ready, left the house, stepped on my scooter, and rode along the pathway by the lake into town. I wondered how the evening would pan out. It had been a whole decade since I had seen most of my old school friends. A few minutes after leaving home, the scooter veered to the left. I assumed the world had gone on this £50 eBay scooter, which I had not had that long. I immediately went to see if I could fix it and turn the handlebar to the right, as if anything happened, but realised that my right arm wasn't doing anything. I felt a swish through my brain, I got severe double vision, and my right side had gone. I got off, I lowered myself to the ground. Oh, no, no, no. I had had a brain hemorrhage and subsequently a stroke. I remember thinking that I wasn't ready to go yet. I imagined that this day would one day come, but I fully anticipated it being many years in the future, and I expected it would involve a major headache, as I had had when I was 15 years old. But there was no pain at all with this one. With severe double vision, I managed to call my dad. 5 minutes before I had left the house, he had gone out, so I knew that he was still in Wellingborough. From my description of the pathway, I knew that he would know exactly where I was. I knew that I had had a stroke because of the symptoms present. I didn't know, however, how big the bleed was, whether it was continuing to bleed, and whether it was clotting on the brain. I needed to get to hospital as soon as possible for a scan. Time was of the essence. I called 999. The call handler asked for the address of the emergency, but I could not give it, for I was in the middle of a pathway that leads to town. I asked if she knew where Sainsbury's was in Wellingborough, as I could easily describe exactly where I was, just down the hill, along by the lake. There is another little hill at the bottom, a stone's throw from the metal railings. The call centre is based in Nottingham though, so she did not know the local area at all. The future campaign for whatfreewords.com was only a few months later, but no one knew about it then. Under usual circumstances, I would have gone to Google Maps and found the nearest street, but I was in a shambles. My control centre was compromised. I didn't know if it were the panic setting in, the double vision, or the weakness, or the combination of all of this, but I couldn't think how to tell her where I was. Luckily, at that very moment, a woman walking her dogs appeared, and I asked her if she could take over the call. She did and told the paramedics the nearest street. In between this, my dad arrived. Everything seemed like slow motion, and it felt like an age. I realised the left side of my face became hypersensitive. As the wind blew, I felt this odd sensation on the upper left back of my head. I'm not sure how, but with the paramedics holding me up by the elbows, with legs like jelly, I managed to hobble to the ambulance. They connected me to a heart monitor. My heart rate was really high. Despite the state I was in, I remember thinking it was of the utmost importance to call someone at the reunion to let them know I was taken ill. I remember the overwhelming sense of dread that I could no longer attend the event that I had organised and was so looking forward to. I was blue-lighted over to Northampton General Hospital. Dad drove there and walked in a few moments after. Owing to the double vision and the shock on my body, I soon began to start vomiting, and I continued to do so on and off for the next few hours. I did not know it was humanly possible to have that much vomit. I was not well. I was taken for a scan, and it was confirmed not to be a continuing clotting bleed, and it was stated that during the night, at some point, my scan would be sent over and reviewed by the team at John Radcliffe Hospital, taking into account my previous medical history. A short while later, my auntie Chris and uncle Alan walked in. I was so pleased to see them. This was the first medical event since my mum had died, and their care, love and support reminded me of how mum would have been there for me. I wanted to talk to an expert to ask what was happening with my brain. I needed answers. That night, I remember the worry that I would fall to sleep and not wake up again. The next morning, it was confirmed that I would be transferred from Northampton General to John Radcliffe Hospital. The ambulance came to pick me up in the afternoon. As they wheeled me along the corridor, I took a photo of the sign above the door. It was funny because the evening before, because of the lack of information about what had actually happened to me, and the fact that I was hoping that whatever it was would pass to allow me to go to the USA, I had tried to convince myself that whatever it was a bad bout of food poisoning or something. The sign above the door disproved this. It says, Eleanor Ward, Hyper Acute Stroke Unit. The ambulance blue-lighted me to Oxford, and occasionally I managed to turn my head, and with one eye shut, managed to focus enough to see the gap out the front and watch the drivers get out the way. I think the following photos sum up my attitude to life. They are of me sat in the back of an ambulance and just being taken out, and I am smiling, but I probably shouldn't have been. I like to document everything, so I asked the lovely paramedics and they obliged. I was so thankful to them. I remember the surreal feeling here. I felt more myself even by this the next day, but my speech was still affected and my vision was still cross-eyed. I had to keep my right eye closed, otherwise there'd be two of everything. My right side still felt weak. I felt fine, but I wasn't fine. I couldn't walk well, but I could briefly stand. Below is a general photo of me feeling sorry for myself, having a bit of a selfie. This was a few days after admission to John Radcliffe Hospital. A few days later, I had a CT head, and then finally I got to see my doctor, who came round to discuss what he thought we should do next. He said that this scan was not detailed enough, and then I would need to go for a full angiogram. I could have told him this. He confirmed that I had had a bleed and most of it had gone into a cavity that had been created from the previous hemorrhage. In order for a more detailed scan, there would be a big wait. The main machines had broken in the hospital that had led to massive delays because of a backlog, and then of course emergencies came in which took priority, and of course this I don't mind. What I did mind, however, was that they told me on a handful of occasions to prepare myself by not eating or drinking. Considering that this saga happened around the hottest day of 2019, I was a dehydrated mess. I was so drowsy. It was at 3 p.m. on one of these days that someone came up to say the scan had not happened. Consider I hadn't drank all day. On another occasion, I had gone down for an eye test, and because the queue was so big to get in, by the time I got back, the porter had already been to take me and I was not there. This led to yet another delay. Below is a photo of me waiting, sprawled out across the bed. Finally, about a week later, I had the angiogram. I found a video on YouTube describing exactly what an angiogram is. And below, I've popped in a video that I made in 2014 where I had an angiogram to monitor my AVM. After an angiogram, you are required to lie flat for 6 hours in order not to rip open the artery in the leg or groin area where they went in. I forgot about this and had ordered a curry that morning. I tried to eat this lying down. The results are shown in the image below. So all of my symptoms from the brain hemorrhage and stroke are listed below. I had double vision, which thankfully corrected itself after 5 days. Right-sided weakness, but mainly a right-sided coordination issue. This took months and months and months to get better and still is not 100%. I still can't carry a drink in my right hand, nor can I type correctly. The left side of my face was overly sensitive. I remember having showers and thinking that the water was blisteringly hot because I could feel each droplet of water hit the left side of my face. There is still a slight difference between the left and right side of my face. The right side of my jaw really felt bruised when I pressed it. This lasted for months and months. There was an inclination not to use the right side of my mouth to eat, as it wasn't as strong and I had this ache, so I moved it over, this is the food, I moved it over to eat with my left side, and this is still something that I continue to do today quite often. The left side of my jaw was clicking every time that I bit down, and this lasted for quite a few weeks. And I discovered that my mouth could not open as wide as it once could. This lasted for about a month or so until I sort of did a bit of therapy on it. Here below are some of the scans of the most recent angiogram, and I think they are fascinating. These are annotated. I think it's just incredible to see where it is, and I think it's great. Below is a video with my sister replicating one of the tests that the doctors do to look at coordination. The left side, absolutely fine, but the right side was certainly not. After a week or so in hospital and being monitored, I decided I wanted to go home. I knew that the best place for me would be in my own bed, and it would have done me so good to be able to force myself to try and make a tea and just force myself to get on with life. The power of doing is so important. In hospital, I did spend a lot of time resting, which perhaps in hindsight was what I needed, but it was not doing my muscles any good. I remember throughout my stay in hospital, I was beginning to get a case of my leg muscles seizing up and they had started to spasm. Below is a video of me walking down the stairs. Look at me go. Possibly not the best choice of footwear here. I used to nearly always wear flip-flops before. I soon wore my Toms for the support on the top of my foot. I didn't think about the brain power that's required for wearing flip-flops. My right foot is just not wired correctly. Wearing them is still quite rare. On one of these walks, and I did many of them, I decided to treat myself to a donut. Below is a general cannula photo. I had many of these inserted during my stay in hospital. And below is a photo of the machine that checks all my levels. I saw this many, many times. All the nurses commented on my low resting heart rate. A sign that they said if they found it in a young person can mean that they are fit and healthy and often exercise. A nice healthy 55 beats per minute. What could have raised my blood pressure is the view out the window. This is of a cemetery, but I did find it quite funny. See the photo below. To make up for the cemetery, just to its left is the helicopter landing pad. I watched the helicopter land a few times and I do find it quite majestic. as I took some photos of my dinner, I'll put them in here. The meals were really nice. I did really quite enjoy them. So the blood on my brain was the reason for the delay in writing this post. I aimed to write this piece soon after I arrived home from hospital, but for the first few months, sadly, my typing skills were too poor. The coordination between my brain and my right side were quite affected, so typing was too much of a difficulty. I don't usually look at the keyboard, and suddenly thinking that my right hand is tapping the correct keys, but a jumble of different letters appearing on the screen left me feeling disheartened and frustrated. Gradually, my ability to type slowly came back, but this was only after tapping day after day after day and having to constantly have my right index finger hovering over the backspace key and seemingly hitting it intermittently. Over time, this requirement decreased. My typing has not returned to complete normality, but it is so much better, and right now, in the most part, the connections have improved, and I have slightly adjusted the way that I type. As I look down right now, my left hand dominates, as it used to do before because I'm left-handed, and predominantly my right index finger, the one next door, and my thumb all work in unison. I want to take this moment and dedicate this space here to thank everyone who came over to see me. Friends and family visited almost every day, and it made the stay so much better, so thank you so much. It was a massive support. Massive. Particular thanks to Alan and Chris, who came over so often. Thank you. I forgot to take a photo of a few people, but I was visited by Maureen and my other auntie. Every day someone came over, and it got to a stage where I nearly had to create a booking system. Below are some of the photos when people came to visit. So I was visited by Vish and Chris, Sam Robinson and my sister. I was visited a couple of times by my sister. Seb had come down, he drove down from Nottingham on one of the hottest days, and it was the first time that I went outside when he wheeled me out in the wheelchair. I was so pleased to feel the gentle breeze and incredibly warm rays of the sun on my face. It is well documented that I like to talk about how much space is given over to the car. I demanded that Seb left me in the middle of this space and took a photo. A massive car often has only one person inside. All that space. After my photo shoot, we chatted for ages and ages on a bench outside. It was lovely. Here's me and my dad and Auntie Lynn, and a couple there of Alan and Chris and me, and then Molly and Vish and me in the lift. I also asked a random woman if she wanted a selfie, and she did, so she's there as well. Some of my ex-colleagues came over, Susanna and Gabriella, and that was lovely. I was so pleased to see them. Jane and Jess come over. They are gorgeous. I was so pleased to see them. Well, I have to say I was pleased to see everyone. I say Amy had driven all the way from Essex. Tom from London. Dad had popped over a few times. David, who I knew from uni. It was a weird coincidence that he also had a family member in the same hospital at the same time, so he popped along to say hi. On one of the visits, I was chatting for so long that I actually missed dinner time completely, and by the time I got back to the ward, they had taken the food away. No worries, I thought to myself, and I ordered a pizza using Deliveroo. I sneaked out from the ward and went down the stairs. It did take me quite a while, but I asked the cyclist to meet me at the edge of the car park, and it worked. In total, I was in John Radcliffe for 2 weeks. As it was nearing the end of the second week, I asked whether I could be discharged. There was hope that I could be. My doctor needed to sign this off. On the Friday, though, I saw this very weird white light appear in front of my face, a bit like a kaleidoscope. I reported this as it was vision, and it could have meant something. The doctors believed it might have been dehydration or a change in blood pressure, but before I could be discharged, the whole neuro team had to review me. This led to hours and hours of delay. The afternoon was passing quickly, and it needed to be signed off by everyone. It got to about 7 p.m. and it was then confirmed that I could go. I had the papers. I For some reason, Dad could not pick me up, but I did phone my cousin Becky and her partner Grizz, and I was so thankful that they could do it. They drove to pick me up. Below is a photo of the corridor which I walked along that gave me the freedom that I wanted. And there's a photo of me with a discharge summary, and in the lift and just by the car with Becky and her partner Grizz. The reason I wanted to be discharged was not entirely to go to the following event, as it was for the reasons listed above, but I wanted a goal and a deadline. Just over a week before discharge, I decided that I would do everything in my power to go to Wellingborough Pride. As Pride season started, I decided to try to attend as many prides as I could. I attended prides in Northampton, Birmingham, Essex, Edinburgh, London and Bristol so far that year. I made my hometown pride my target, and I managed to get there. A short while after I arrived home from discharge, Seb arrived home too. I asked him to be on standby and had confirmed that I was shortly due to leave. He kindly had offered to take me to Wellingborough Pride in his car and be there with me for the entire day. I really appreciated his support. Here are some photos of me below with my rainbow leggings on. As you can see, there was still a bit of an issue naturally standing. I look a bit stiff. The recovery journey from this saga was very long. It seemed that the first handful of weeks were a period where I could notice many gradual changes, but it suddenly seemed like it plateaued. For example, a couple of days after I arrived home, I decided to get back on my bicycle. Thankfully, Vishal popped round to support me. Again, incredibly thankful he was there. It was such a strange feeling sitting on my bicycle. It felt like an age since the last time I pedalled. I held onto the bridge and supported myself with that. I just couldn't balance though as I tried to cycle slowly. I decided to just go for it and push. It was so precarious, but I did it. Such a surreal feeling. I repeated this many times. It was quite a few weeks for it to rewire itself correctly. It's difficult to see how bad it was, but if you look closely at my right leg, it kind of felt like my right leg was falling off the pedal. It just didn't have the connection. It wouldn't stick onto the pedal. Watch the above video right to the end. Generally speaking, it took weeks and weeks and weeks of going out walking and cycling short distances to improve. Finally, I got to a stage where I felt comfortable and safe to myself and, importantly, to others to get back on the road. I have since had some stereotactic radiosurgery treatment, which I will discuss in a later post. Thanks for reading or listening to this or looking at the photos. Speak soon. Samuel.